It's a Wonderful Economy.
The Frangie version of It's a Wonderful Life. Every time a bell rings, a Frangie gets his lobes.
This episode of Metatrex is brought to you by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
There's no greater challenge than the study of philosophy.
My philosophy is that there is room for all philosophies on this station.
Well, welcome everyone to episode 12 of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. My name is Mike Morrison, and with me is my esteemed co-host, Zachary Frueling. In this episode, we'll be discussing the philosophical problem of the meaning of life and how this issue is played out in the Star Trek universe. Zachary, episode 12, here we are.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It feels like quite a while since we've done this. It's been a couple weeks since we recorded an episode. I was taken out by the crud. It was New Year's Eve crud. It wasn't con crud, which sadly means that I'm not going to enough Star Trek conventions in life. But it's great to be recording another episode after having been sick for a couple weeks. I'm on the mend. Dr. Crusher let me out of sick bay, and I'm back on duty.
Great. Whatever she put in the hypo, that seems to be working.
So far, so good.
Well, listen, I want to go ahead and mention by the time this episode of Metatrex drops, our little ratings promotion will have come to an end. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who went into iTunes and gave us a star rating and a review. And all of those names will be put in a hat, and we'll draw one lucky winner who will win a Trek FM hoodie. And again, by the time this episode drops, we will have already announced that winner in the Babel Conference, and we will also announce the winner's name on episode 13 of Metatrex. And Zachary, we had so much fun with this particular promotion and really appreciated the interaction from our listeners. I suspect we'll probably do this again sometime down the road. What do you think?
Yeah, we don't want anyone to feel left out if they missed the chance to leave a rating and a review for us during this contest, but we'll try to run a contest like this periodically every 2 or 3 months, somewhere in there.
Yeah, everyone loves Trek FM merchandise out there. I see the merch picks on the Babel Conference, so folks are really digging that, and we're looking forward to giving a Trek FM hoodie to a lucky listener. So, Zachary, our topic for episode 12 of Metatrex is the meaning of life and how it's played out in the Star Trek universe. And this was a topic that you chose for us, and let's dive right in.
Well, you know, usually I like to ask a really precise, well-defined philosophical question, and the meaning of life strikes me as one of these questions that could be really vague or could mean a number of different things to different people. In fact, it strikes me as the kind of question that Data might ask to Captain Picard. You know, I can picture Data going into Captain Picard's ready room and saying, you know, Captain Picard, I've got a question I'd like to ask you. And Captain Picard says, okay, Data, go ahead. And he says, what is the meaning of life? And he goes, oh, is that all?
Yeah, drops the mic and walks out.
Exactly.
Oh, Captain, what is the meaning of life?
Oh, is that all? You know, I thought you were going to ask me a simple question.
Boom. So walks out.
So I worry a little bit that this question is a little vague and more than we can bite off in an hour or an hour and a half podcast. But it's probably the most important question, right? I mean, you know, the questions that come up in philosophy tend to be really abstract and impractical, and it's not always obvious how they apply to the real world or your real life. But the question of meaning, what life means to you and whether life is or isn't worth living, these kinds of questions are at the heart of the human condition, what it means to be alive and be conscious and be self-aware. So it's really one of the more important questions, even if it's a little hard to pin the question down about what it really means.
And interestingly enough, Zachary, this is something that I think every individual has to ascertain on their own to a great degree for themselves, answer for themselves, I should say. As sure as there are many different cultures, and we all come from different backgrounds, different heritage. We have different political views, social views, religious views, certainly. And so all of these different backgrounds and viewpoints funnel into how we answer this essential question. And it's certainly true in the Star Trek universe as well. When we think about, you know, the Ferengi, the Klingons, the Cardassians, the Romulans, all of these different cultures, certainly the, and it, within the Federation, I think about, you know, Vulcans and Andorians and Tellarites and humans, and they all have to answer this question in their own way, and they certainly do. And we see that really well thought out in the universe of Star Trek.
Well, you're hitting on something that speaks to a fundamental distinction about how you might approach this question. One answer to the question of the meaning of life is to try to find some sort of overarching transcultural sort of meta-narrative about the meaning of life, meaning with a big capital M, right? Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of life in general for everyone, regardless of your culture or your background? And then there's the meaning of life with a sort of a small m, you know, meaning that's relative to you as an individual, or meaning that's relative to your culture or your race inside Star Trek. And it's not obvious which approach is correct. I think generally we live in a you know, the 20th and 21st century sort of postmodern, skeptical, more relativist worldview. I think that's the worldview we're living in right now, more or less. And so there is, I think, a general skepticism about the ability to find a narrative about meaning with a big capital M that applies to everyone and at all times that people are willing to subscribe to. And if you reject a notion like that, if you can't find sort of a grand overarching theme about meaning, then the question remains, well, how do you go about finding meaning? How do individuals or cultures find meaning in a way that really provides a satisfactory answer to what is the meaning of life and whether life is or isn't worth living?
I recently watched an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, The Chase. And in that particular episode, Captain Picard is visited by an old professor, a mentor, a father figure, mm-hmm. and he offers him an opportunity to accompany him on an archaeological, an archaeological adventure, let's say. And in the course of things, gentleman dies after his shuttle's attacked, and Picard finds himself with a mystery, and that mystery ultimately leads him and certainly the Klingons and the Romulans and the Cardassians to a planet where they are able to put together a DNA sequence that unlocks the great mystery of the universe. And surprisingly enough, and I think it's more than just the fact that the actress who plays the alien figure in the hologram projection also played the founder in Deep Space Nine. But I thought it was interesting that particular alien looked like a founder. And she basically tells them that their race has long since passed, but they seeded the primordial oceans of many worlds, and we suddenly find out that to some degree we all have a common heritage. So when I am answering the question of what is the meaning of life, I always find myself going to the essential question of, you know, what are the origins of life? And here certainly is one theory of origin, not just in the Star Trek universe, but it's a theory of origin in our own.
That episode you mentioned, The Chase, has always been interesting to me because, you know, one of the virtues of trying to find a grand narrative within which you can weave the smaller narratives, like in that episode, right, the individual sort of race stories of the Romulans and Klingons and other races get woven together into this grand biological narrative of the origin of all of those races and the evolution of each of all of those races, right? And that has the potential to kind of unite those races and get the the people involved to focus on the similarities, their common background, you know, the things about their stories that unite them together, right? It could be really unifying, and that has value. I think, you know, you and I are both Americans, right? So there is the sense in which being an American has the ability to unite people of different cultures together in one larger narrative. And I think that's what that episode is going for, right? It has the potential to unite these races in a way they've never been united together before, because their identities get woven together because of their origin stories. But unfortunately, that lasts like a week, right? Before they go back to you know, warring as usual and the same, you know, disagreements and I don't know, the same, what do you call it? I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. It lasts about a week before they go back to their disagreements and their arguments and their warlike natures, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I see the potential, and I think this is why you should take the question of the meaning of life in some broader sense seriously. And I think whenever you ask philosophical questions, I think you have to motivate the question, right? Why do we care about this question? Why should we go about trying to find a larger narrative to answer the question of the meaning of life? And I think that's the answer right there, because if we can find a narrative that really can apply across cultures, that has the potential to unite people and applies directly to the question of whether we'll be able to have some sort of universal peace in the sense that Star Trek is always aiming for.
What I really found fascinating towards the end of the episode, when they do make the discovery that they share common origin, the reactions of the different species, you know, the Romulan, or I'm sorry, not the Romulans, but rather the Cardassians, who were disgusted at the idea. I mean, she even said it made her nauseous, sick at her stomach to think that she would have anything in common with a Klingon. And then you have the more thoughtful response. I really enjoy the scene at the end of that particular episode when Captain Picard is saying farewell to the to his Romulan counterpart. And the Romulan captain says to him, you know, well, you know, we may have more in common than what, you know, what we first thought. And who knows, perhaps down the road, it might, you know, might bring a little more unity to our two peoples. And, you know, there was a hopefulness there that you know, perhaps it could. And you're right. I think it does influence this question and the direction that we take when we look at the grander, the meta issue, the meta narrative that we find in this question.
Well, I think for races and worlds that are already part of the Federation, being part of the Federation has become something of that grand narrative, right? The scene I'm imagining is the scene of in Star Trek Nemesis, when Captain Picard is standing inside the Romulan Senate talking with Shins on, his counterpart. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, if there's one ideal that the Federation holds, it's that all races, all worlds can be united together in peace. And that is the kind of meta narrative that I think that it's crucial to the mission of the Federation and for the worlds that are part of the Federation. The idea that the quest to sort of unite with other races and learn from them in some sort of peaceful coexistence it becomes a part of each race's own narrative, right? You know, in some sense, each world has to give up its own cultural identity for the sake of being part of the Federation and taking on that larger narrative.
Indeed. Indeed. And that's I think you hit the nail on the head there. And that's a great example. And we've talked about this before, you know, the similarities between Captain Picard and Shinzon in that movie. And yet, because of their unique backgrounds, how different they really are, in that they share common DNA and everything about them is exactly alike, right? Except for their separate experiences and how that shaped the way they answer this question. What is the meaning of life?
So I think the counterpoint to the question of the meaning of life in Star Trek. So on the one hand, you can say that the Federation has provides this kind of grand narrative that we're looking for when we're talking about the meaning of life with a big capital M. But I do have a question about whether Star Trek suffers from some sort of a crisis of meaning, some sort of an existential nihilistic crisis, given the sheer vastness of space to explore, you know, the radical plurality of different cultures and worlds. I mean, every time, you know, the crew of the Enterprise goes out and explores a new world, they're confronted with people who are different and have different values and different different views about what's right and wrong and different social structures. And any attempt to sort of ground the meaning of life in the Federation's own ideals constantly runs up against counterexamples that it finds out in the out in the rest of the galaxy, right? So I worry that maybe given the vastness of the galaxy and given the plurality of the of different cultures in the worlds, that every time you try to ground the meaning of life inside these Federation ideals, you know, there's this sort of skeptical voice that creeps up and go, well, really, is that the meaning of life? Look at all these other people who are functioning just fine without these ideals. Mm-hmm. In what sense does that really answer the meaning of life? So I can kind of envision Federation citizens or Starship crew members having some sort of a crisis of meaning, given this day in, day out exploration into the unknown that ultimately just leads to more and more, I don't want to say nothingness, but more and more counterexamples to their own view out in the galaxy at large.
That's becoming, I think, a more prevalent topic. And, you know, during the early episodes of Enterprise, they dealt with this to some degree. You know, here were these humans, predominantly on a human ship, going out and stretching their legs into the vastness of the universe, really for the first time. And as they encounter these different cultures, they find themselves oftentimes in conflict, their own values, their own answers to that question, the meaning of life, conflicting with other species, other races. They encounter races that, you know, frankly don't want the humans sticking their noses in everything that's going on out there in the universe. The Klingons certainly don't want to have anything to do with us. And, you know, the Suliban, for instance, we become, you know, pawns in a temporal Cold War, and there are bigger things going on than even what you know, humanity realizes. And for that matter, in the original series and Next Generation, we explore this quite a bit. And it seems, Zachary, that in the upcoming movie Star Trek Beyond, as Chris, our president and publisher, would say, they're going to tackle this question quite a bit, because it seems that the villain in this movie is going to push back. In fact, in the trailer, the very controversial trailer, it seems that there's some dialogue there that directly addresses this. You know, this idea that, you know, Federation ideals and philosophies aren't necessarily welcome out there in the universe, and seems that we're going to encounter a culture that is going to push back, and they've got their own answers to what is the meaning of life, and they don't want the Federation pushing in and trying to answer these questions for them.
I think you're right. They do deal with this in Enterprise, right? You know, they're the first people who are on a warp five ship that are out there exploring, you know, literally the frontier. And at a certain point, you can ask the question, you know, is this just more trouble than it's worth, right? You know, we're out here and we're bumping into the furniture all over the place. You know, the Klingons already don't like us. We've been out here about a week. And, you know, you can start to ask yourself, you know, we've been telling ourselves this narrative of progress, right? You know, we build these starships so we can go out and explore. We're standing on our own 2 feet. It's really this sort of existentially strong, you know, free will kind of approach, right? We're going to stand on our own 2 feet and build starships and go out and explore. And spread you know, Starfleet and human values to the rest of the galaxy. We're at least going to go out and try to make some friends. And once they start bumping into the furniture and it's not going very well, I could imagine wanting to tuck tail and run and turning back and asking themselves, why are we out here? This is just more trouble than it's worth. You know, we're going to make more enemies than friends out here. And I could imagine that sort of undercutting this narrative that Starfleet has been telling itself, right? That it's important for us to go out and explore the galaxy and build our own starships. And I could imagine this sort of fundamentally undercutting meaning that Starfleet officers find in trying to go out and explore and move the human race forward in some way.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, and I've kind of been pondering this in my head a little bit. You mentioned earlier, if Data were to walk into Captain Picard's ready room and say, "Captain Picard, query, what is the meaning of life?" I don't know, Zachary.
He might say, "I don't know. Go talk to anyone else, right? I don't have any comments on that. I don't know anything about women either." And go ask someone else.
Ask Geordi. Have you talked to Counselor Troy? I think Captain...
So what would Captain Picard say?
You know, for me, I think Captain Picard, if just in one word, I think Captain Picard's answer would be progress. It's about progress. It's about progressing the human condition.
You know, and in the history of philosophy, there are several answers to the question of the meaning of life, or at least different approaches to trying to answer the question of the meaning of life. And one of which is what you might call human progress. And of course, in Star Trek, you can't just talk about humans, but, you know, I would call it human or scientific or social progress. Mm-hmm. The idea that you can find meaning in moving your race or your world or your political organization like the Federation forward in some way, solving social problems, learning new things through science and technology in some way. So, you know, using the tools to sort of move the human race forward, you can certainly try to find meaning in that. And I think of all the answers to the question of the meaning of life that you find in philosophy, I think this is the one that sounds most Star Trek-y to me, right? The idea that part of the reason we're out here exploring the galaxy is to move the human race forward in some way. And then for me, the immediate next question is, well, if you're moving the human race forward, and that's part of the reason we're out here exploring the galaxy, what are we aiming towards? I mean, it's the very idea of forward seems to imply some sort of progress towards some sort of an ideal. Mm-hmm. And that puts me back in the sphere of some sort of a grand meta-narrative, something along the lines of the Federation's ideals and meaning that transcends just human values to some sort of larger sphere.
Yeah. The more I think about this, I think Star Trek as a whole, This is kind of what it's all about, right? Captain Picard, I think, does answer this question several times throughout the course of The Next Generation, certainly to some degree, even in the movies, you know, talking about, technological progress, the increase of knowledge, scientific progress. I mean, that's why they're out there exploring, right? So I think, at least for me, this is really what Star Trek is all about. It's the idea of going out and increasing knowledge, and we talk about mankind, but you know we realize that the Federation are made up of, you know, at least in the time of Next Generation, so you know hundreds of worlds, and you know progressing and increasing knowledge and scientific progress and social progress, and we're out here just trying to better ourselves.
You know, as I was thinking about this issue before the show today, I was thinking about the origins of Star Trek, you know, what Gene Roddenberry had in mind in conceiving of Star Trek. And of course, you know, fans of the show know that Gene Roddenberry thought of Star Trek, sort of in quotes, as a wagon train to the stars, right? Putting us out mm-hmm. in a new kind of frontier, you know, in the history of America, right? We've had the West being the frontier, right? You know, we sent the cavalry out into the West and we ran into Native Americans and had all the conflicts you might imagine as we encountered tribe after tribe after tribe of Native Americans with different values and different types of conflict and whatnot. So this wagon train to the stars aspect to me evokes some sort of universal progress narrative that's somewhat analogous to the American view of manifest destiny in the 18th and 19th centuries.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Kind of come full circle to what we were talking about earlier, you know, with colonialism. And again, I think that with the new movie, this is going to be something we'll probably talk about more and more. But
I guess the thing I find interesting about this, Mike, is that this narrative of progress is almost too easy of an answer, right? It's a very sort of feel-good answer, right? We're going to go out into the galaxy and we're going to increase our knowledge and we're going to make new, we're going to form treaties with other races that we find and we're going to, start the Federation and we're going to, it's kind of a happily ever after kind of story, right? This increasing narrative of progress over time. It's a very appealing answer, but I think the dirty other side of the coin might be this idea of manifest destiny, right? You can bump into a lot of furniture and step on a lot of toes as you go out and try to not impose your own values, but as you try to spread your own values and put yourself out into the universe like they're doing in on the frontier, whether it's in Enterprise or in Star Trek the original series. I think there's a reason that the term manifest destiny has negative connotations to us in this day and age, and largely to historians, because it's very hegemonic, right? It's the idea that you don't just go out into the universe to explore and live and let live. You go out into the universe to basically turn other races into your own image. And the Federation tends to do that. And the other races in Star Trek are very critical of the Federation for trying to impose Federation values on them rather than just sort of letting them be, so to speak.
Yeah, Zachary, I agree completely with what you're saying. And I think that the criticism that is leveled against Star Trek, at least these days, and again, I think this is a much younger narrative, if you will, because certainly these criticisms didn't exist during the original series. They didn't exist during Next Generation. It's only in the last 10 or 15 years that I think we've even begun to take a look at that. And as people go back and they rewatch, they find themselves criticizing how the Federation is portrayed. And again, I think this is something that will be addressed much more once the new movie comes out, because it does seem to be somewhat of a theme in the movie. And I think the criticisms that are out there are legitimate, and it's certainly a dialogue that needs to be opened up. The Federation, to some degree, could represent a kind of a nanny state that goes out spreading its own brand of colonialism throughout the galaxy.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing that, to me, gives the trailer, and we've only seen a little bit of Star Trek Beyond, right? We've just seen that what I would even call a teaser trailer that was edited for pairing with the new Star Wars, The Force Awakens movie. And it's largely cut as an action trailer, right? So, but, you know, there's this line that, you know, this is where the frontier pushes back. And this is one of those things that Star Trek has almost made it too easy to be on the frontier, right? You know, you go out and, you know, yeah, you might have a war once in a while, or you might have a skirmish once in a while, but largely progressing further and further and further into the frontier has been a peaceful existence, right? Over time, you know, there's certainly been a war with the Klingons and a war with the Romulans, but those have all been settled. And over time, the Federation tends to expand. And the 24th century of Picard is more peaceful than the 23rd century of Kirk and the 22nd century of Archer, right? So, but that's almost too easy of a story, right? I mean, you really want the frontier to push back a bit. And that might be the genius of Star Trek Beyond, if there's any philosophical genius to it that we can discern so far based from that one trailer. It's that Star Trek has, you know, as much as we love the optimism and the ideals of Star Trek, and I think we're all Star Trek fans partly because I think we like those ideals. That's one of the things that speaks to us about Star Trek compared to other franchises. But it's almost too easy of a story. And the idea that the frontier can push back, that people don't always want the Federation to be there, you know, imposing itself on their lives or cultures or whatnot. I don't think Star Trek has ever really confronted that issue head on, and it's an interesting idea to see if that's one of the themes of Star Trek Beyond. That really could be a very contemporary retelling of the Star Trek story, taking in mind some of the critical theory of the mid and late 20th century about the criticisms of colonialism that arose, you know, only in the last few decades. And like I said, when Star Trek was new in the mid 1960s, you know, while critical theory was alive and well at that point, I don't think it was generally well known. And America was firmly entrenched in some sort of a progress narrative that is analogous to the progress narrative you see in Star Trek: social progress and scientific progress and technological progress. There was no more frontier, but it was the progress narrative that led to westward expansion and all the progress you saw in the 20th century. And you know, that's what was going on, I think, in Gene Roddenberry's mind when he created Star Trek, as far as I know. But that doesn't take into account all the criticisms of that view. And I don't think Star Trek has really ever confronted those criticisms head on. And I'm really anxious to see if that's one of the themes of Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking about the episode from Next Generation. I think we're going to the fourth season, somewhere about mid-season. I think maybe 14, 15, 16. The title of the episode was First Contact, not to be, obviously, not to be confused with the movie First Contact. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Commander Riker finds himself injured in a hospital on a planet that's just getting ready to develop warp technology. And the Federation's been there for years surveying these people. And, you know, when it's discovered, you know, they're faced with the question. And the leader of this planet, the chancellor of this planet, you know, says to Captain Picard, you know, what happens if I tell you to go? And Captain Picard says, well, you know, we'll go. And at the end of the episode, spoilers here, that's exactly what happens. You know, they end up ultimately saying to them, listen, we're not ready to become part of this galactic community. We're not ready for this expansion. We're not ready. We're still struggling and trying to, you know, figure out, you know, I love the speech that he said, you know, this morning I woke up and I was the leader of, you know, the universe. And now I find that I'm just a voice in a chorus here in the galaxy.
I like contrasting that episode with what you see in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, because in that episode, they're similar concerns, right? The Klingons in that episode are rightly concerned that the Federation is a threat to their own culture, right? In dismantling the Iron Curtain, so to speak, and dismantling the neutral zone and reaching peace with the Federation, Klingons are concerned about the annihilation of their own culture. I think just as the race inside that episode, First Contact, is concerned about something along those lines. Except in regards to the Klingons, you just don't have the luxury of withdrawing, right? You can't just say, we're going to leave the Klingons alone. The Klingons are too close and too entrenched, and there's too much history there, right? So I liked what Star Trek VI was trying to do in terms of pushing back, in terms of the Federation's narrative of peace and the underbelly of that and its threatening nature to anyone who's on the receiving end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think about the Baku in Star Trek Insurrection. And again, just contrasting the difference between cultures here and how they're answering this essential question, was the meaning of life. You have the Federation. It's all about progress. It's all about moving forward, moving their species forward. And here are the Baku that are perfectly content, you know, in the world that they're in. And it's about slowing down and appreciating, you know, the simplicity of the moment. And they define progress differently. The meaning of life has a different meaning to them. And again, I think that is true in the episode I just referenced, First Contact. You know, for them, they're just getting ready to develop warp technology. But, you know, again, they're not necessarily interested in getting out right now at this particular moment in their history and joining the greater stellar community. They're perfectly content, you know, where they're at, except, of course, for Lanel, who has always wanted to make love to an alien.
I'm sorry, I have no response to that.
I love the fact.
Well, if that doesn't give your life meaning, I don't know what does. Right?
I love the fact, though, that Riker acts like he's appalled that he's got to trade sexual favors to, you know, for an escape plan out of that hospital.
Yeah, he gives in, though.
But he does. Yeah, yes, right, he does. Sure. It was quick.
He'll find a way to make it meaningful for both parties. So you're touching on something, though, that I think is really important, right? If you push back against this idea of the progress narrative, you know, right? If Star Trek's answer to the question of the meaning of life in some sort of grand meta narrative, capital M kind of sense, is the notion of progress, and you push back against that, and if you end up skeptical of that progress narrative, then you still have to ask the question, well, what is the meaning of life then? If it's not this grand progress narrative that we're pushing back on with issues of colonialism and manifest destiny and cultural annihilation and all of the things we've been talking about, what is the meaning of life you know, if you lose the grand narrative, what is the meaning of life then? And I think one philosophical answer to the question of the meaning of life is that there is no meaning of life, right? Nihilism is one possible answer to the question. The idea that there just is no meaning and life is fundamentally absurd or meaningless. And that, I think, is the exact other end of the spectrum, right? If a grand meta-narrative is one end of the philosophical spectrum to answer this question, then the other easy answer is that life is just meaningless. What do you think about that nihilistic response? You know, in other words, if you end up skeptical of the grand narrative, are you forced into the category of nihilism?
I think the answer, at least for Star Trek to some degree, and again, we're kind of dredging back into looking at the meaning of life according to, you know, the various species, is to some degree, yes, I think is the short answer. You know, if for instance, a Klingon suffers we were bantering in the turbolift on the way here about the Ferengi suffering, you know, this existential crisis. We actually see, for instance, Klingons experiencing existential crisis in the Star Trek universe and their response. You know, for instance, the next episode, Next Generation episode, Ethics, you know, Worf is injured. He's broken his spine. He's paralyzed from the neck down. And all of a sudden he realizes that life no longer holds any meaning. He can't be a warrior anymore. So what's the answer for a Klingon? Well, the answer for a Klingon is suicide. And so he asks his son Alexander to help him commit suicide. We see the same thing happen in season 4, episode 14, I think it is, of DS9, the episode Sons of Moog, in which Kern comes to Worf and says, you know what, you're fine, you've got Starfleet, but I've lost everything, life no longer has any meaning for me, you got to help me commit suicide, brother. And Worf at least tries to oblige him.
But I think it's telling that the stories don't end there, right? I mean, Worf doesn't end up committing suicide, and he doesn't remain a nihilist. And, you know, Kern's a kind of a different category because they wipe his memory. And
yeah, they had to wipe his memory.
Yeah, so I'm not sure Kern is really the best example in that case because, you know, while he's having an existential crisis, he doesn't remember having one. So. And maybe that's the real answer.
Maybe that is the real answer.
Lobotomy is the answer to an existential crisis. So there you go. You heard it here on Metatrix. No, but I think it's telling that Worf doesn't end up. He doesn't stay in this existential crisis nihilistic mode where he wants to kill himself. Right. He ends up finding new meaning in this quest to, you know, he basically this is one of these instances where Worf gives up the Klingon direction and decides to go his own direction. Right. He finds meaning in sticking around to trying to battle through this together with his son, and he finds meaning in that. And so I think, in my mind, nihilism is just kind of an intermediate stage, right? You kind of go through this stage where you realize, okay, we start out with these grand progress narratives, and you realize that at some point, maybe the grand narrative breaks down or it has some issues. You become skeptical of the grand narrative, and then you immediately react completely against that. And you get this nihilistic concern, this existential crisis, this nagging instinct that maybe life is meaningless and you don't find meaning in anything that used to give your life meaning. And then slowly you kind of creep out of that and you realize there's all kinds of little ways of finding meaning in the things around you, the things you choose to commit yourself to, or the things you choose to dedicate your life to, the small moments of joy you can find in life that you weren't paying attention to. And these things, you know, give your life meaning. They're not meaning in some sort of grand meta-narrative sense, right? They're not the meaning of life with a capital M. They're not a manifest destiny writ large, right? The Federation's grand, you know, trek into the stars, right? But it's not that there's no meaning whatsoever. It's just meaning of a different sort. It's meaning with a lowercase m, some sort of local or cultural or individual meaning. And I think that's kind of the progression. You kind of, you know, peak at this really grand sense of a meta narrative. It collapses down. You become totally skeptical. You become a nihilist, and eventually you sort of find a middle ground where you realize that doesn't mean life is totally meaningless. It may not have the universal meaning that it had under the grand narrative, but it's not a meaningless life.
Yeah, I agree.
It's almost like the philosopher Hegel had this view of dialectic, where you kind of start out with a received view on something, you know, whatever the worldview is, whatever the accepted standards are, and eventually there's some sort of a strong reaction against that, a counter movement. And he puts it in terms of the terms thesis and antithesis. So the existing worldview or the existing accepted story would be the thesis, right? And in this case, it would be the human or scientific progress narrative, right? This manifest destiny narrative of the Federation might be something along the lines of Hegel's thesis. And this nihilistic reaction to that might be the antithesis, right? That's the really strong 180 degrees reaction against the accepted view. And eventually on Hegel's view, you reach some sort of middle ground, what he calls the synthesis, where, you know, the best of both extremes get combined together into something that becomes a new standard, a new accepted received view. And he calls that the synthesis. And of course, that becomes the new received view. And eventually there's a reaction against that. And for Hegel, this cycle goes on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. But this discussion of the meaning of life seems to fall into that category. It seems like there's a really strong sort of universal view about the meaning of life. There's a really strong reaction against that. And then if you try to find meaning with a lowercase m, if you try to find your own meaning, just like Worf does in sort of rejecting the idea that he needs to commit suicide to find meaning in his life, that is a way of finding meaning. It's not the same kind of meaning as the grand narrative, but it still falls in the category of meaning in some sense.
Oftentimes we see this theme played out, and I can think of a dozen episodes just off the top of my head where the episode begins with someone kind of living in this world of their, you know, their own ideas and philosophies and just kind of meandering along, and they have, you know, some type of crisis that challenges, you know, their answer to the question, what is the meaning of life? And the episode is all about, you know, how they deal with that, how they, you know, how they approach the question, what changes that they need to make, if any, to their own thoughts. Sometimes the answer is, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, just sticking to your guns and you know, shouldering through it. Other times, it, you know, requires the character to adjust their ideas and philosophies. And at the end of the episode, they have somewhat of a different response. It's funny because when we begin The Next Generation, Captain Picard is very comfortable being to himself, and he is somewhat isolated. He's not good with children, and that's okay. And he's ship shape and by the book, and that's okay. And there's, you know, again, this wall of separation between him and his crew, and that's okay. But by the end of the series, I mean, the very last scene in The Next Generation, he comes in to a poker game, and I almost feel like as I replay that scene in my mind, all of them sitting around the poker table, and, you know, he's saying, I should have done this a long time ago, and Troy says, you are always welcome. I almost get the sense that is the end answer for Captain Picard. This is what life is all about. It's the camaraderie of these people who are no longer just crewmen under my command, but they're my friends.
Well, I think you're hitting on something. I think for Captain Picard, he goes through a similar progression to the Hegelian dialectic progression we just talked about. At the beginning of Star Trek: The Next Generation, Captain Picard is really concerned that if he socializes with his crew in any sort of informal way, he will be less of a captain, right? People won't take him seriously and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that's part of his character growth, is to realize that he can still be a perfectly effective captain and learn to have a good time and be friends with his crew at the same time. And that doesn't threaten the idea of him being a good Starfleet captain. And that, I think, meaning is like that. I think as you start to question the idea of a universal meaning of life in some big grandiose sense, you start to have to realize that, you know, just because that you don't go that direction with the question of meaning, you can still find meaning in some other sense, and you don't lose anything in emphasizing those kinds of meaning as opposed to focusing on the grand narrative.
No, I don't think so at all.
Or do we? Or do we lose something if we don't have some sort of unifying narrative to bind all of our experiences and all of our cultures together into some sort of meaningful meta-narrative?
Sure. I think, funny enough, the development of Captain Picard in the Next Generation, and we see all of the things that go on to sort of bring him to that place at the end of season 7. You know, his experience with the Borg and the various things that happened to him, being changed back into a child, and his experience with Q. And let's face it, Q. What makes Q such a great anti-hero is that he causes Captain Picard to actually think. He really gives him some food for thought. But funny enough, the progression that we see for Captain Picard, I think, is very similar to the progression that the actor Patrick Stewart kind of took on over the course of the episode. I've seen interviews and even the opportunity to see most of the cast of Next Generation a year ago at Comic-Con here in Dallas, you know, sharing stories, talking about how serious he was about the work early on in season one. And he didn't cut up. He didn't joke with them. It was all about professionalism. And, you know, by the end of the series, the run,
he was the silliest
cut up of all of them.
Exactly.
And I think I think even for the actor Patrick Stewart, I think the meaning of life probably evolved for him.
Well, you seem to be hitting on something that I don't know if I want to focus on too much, but it seems like for whether it's for Captain Picard, the character, or for Patrick Stewart, the actor, the idea that you can find meaning in friendship and camaraderie and spending time and caring about the people you care about, that is a way of finding meaning. That it's not sort of a grand meta narrative for the meaning of life, but it does give most of us meaning in life in some way, right? Our friends or our family or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about making your own meaning, defining your own meaning in life. And again, it goes back to something I said early on in today's episode. I think to some degree, all of us answer this question for ourselves, rather than a grand, meta narrative, just kind of, defining the meaning for ourselves. What is the meaning of life for me? What is the meaning of life for you? What is the meaning of life for, someone who's listening and pondering the question? Is there a meta narrative out there that applies to everybody? I can say I have the answer, but at the end of the day,
Well, there's a political way in trying to formulate a narrative, right? That's a political move, is to try to create a narrative that other people will assent to. So, whether one exists in some sort of deep metaphysical sense, right? Like the meaning of life being woven into the fabric of the universe, I think isn't necessarily the real question. I think the question in terms of those meta narratives is whether a majority or a plurality of the people will assent to some narrative that is being created by someone as a political move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's going on with Manifest Destiny, and that's what's going on with, the rise of the Federation. There is kind of a political move to create a narrative that other right. people besides yourself will assent to.
Another response, Zachary, to the question of the meaning of life, and we kind of touched on it, it would be a theistic response. You mentioned earlier that, the Bajorans would probably fit in this category. Because the meaning of life for them is tied into their religious beliefs about the prophets and their history as a people, and how culturally their planet has been shaped by the at least the predominant religion on the planet.
Well, just to kind of formalize the discussion a little bit, so we started out with this question of the meaning of life, and one big category of answers to that question is the question of progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of meta-narrative, progress narrative that the Federation has. The reaction against that would be some sort of nihilistic response, the idea mm-hmm. that life is meaningless, and the idea that you find meaning in some small M sense by individually or in your community by committing yourself to things and finding or making your own meaning. That's what I would call the existential existentialist response to meaning. And the fourth category that you just alluded to there is the theistic response. You know, if you have a theistic worldview like the Bajorans do in Star Trek, that is going to be the central answer to the question of meaning in your life. I think if you ask the Bajorans what's the meaning of life, they would immediately invoke their theistic view about the prophets, right? That's an essential part of the meaning of life for Bajoran believers, for lack of a better word, the Bajoran faithful, right?
Right.
And you know, and again, I think that answer is not going to be terribly convincing to anyone who isn't a believer in a particular faith, right? You know, as a Christian, you're going to have a certain answer to the question of the meaning of life that's not going to be terribly convincing to people of other faiths. Just like I think the Bajoran's answer to the question of the meaning of life is not going to be terribly convincing to the Klingons or to the and definitely not to the Cardassians, right? So, you know, again, it's a question of how adequate is the answer, right? It's certainly unanswered to the question of meaning. For the Bajorans, the question of their faith, their theistic worldview that grounds the meaning of life for them, that's a meta narrative, right? That is a large universal scope
big
narrative.
Picture, sure.
It's a big picture narrative that grounds the fundamental meaning of their life in some sort of universal sense. Whether it's just for them or whether it's supposed to apply to, you know, other beings that are out there in the universe, whatsoever. I think it's kind of an open question, but certainly that's the starting point for meaning for the Bajorans. And I think for anyone who has a theistic view, I think it's hard to talk about meaning without invoking that particular faith in some way. But again, it's not a satisfying answer in some sort of meta narrative sense. I think even though from within the faith, it sounds like a meta narrative and it functions as a meta narrative. But really what we're talking about is some sort of cultural relativistic meaning, right? The meaning for life for Bajorans is tied to their theology, and the meaning of life for Klingons is tied to their theology involving views about Kales and whatnot. And the same is probably true for any particular religion you can find, whether inside or outside of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, for me, it's easy to say, you know, I believe that I was created by a divine being, and that my purpose and life's meaning for me is tied into the purpose for which, you know, I was created for. And that's certainly true for the Bajorans. But, you know, for a listener, for instance, who is an atheist, that answer is not going to be very satisfying.
Yeah, it's not going to be a very salient answer. And of course, from the perspective of inside a particular faith, just like the Bajorans, they have a certain view about the meaning of Sisko's life. Whether or not Sisko has come to embrace his role as the emissary yet, the Bajorans, specifically Kaio Paka, you know, has this view about what's the meaning of Sisko's life is in light of certain prophecies about the emissary. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, from within a particular faith, I think you can have views about the meaning of life for other people, even, you know, if you believe other people were created by the divine being you believe in, or that other people play a certain role in your theology or your prophecies or whatnot, that is a way of finding meaning in some sort of universal sense. It's not just tied to people within your faith, right? You can have a view about the meaning of life for people or beings in general. But again, I think you're right. That's just not going to be a terribly convincing answer if you're not already within the faith in some way.
Yeah, and we see that played out quite a bit in Deep Space Nine, even though to a great degree the Bajorans and their culture and their religion play a major role in the narrative of that particular series, because after all, this is a space station in Bajoran space, and you know the space station is predominantly made up of Bajorans. But you know, we also see other cultures. We you know, Quark is a Ferengi, and Martok is a Klingon, and you know, I think about Gul Dukat is a Cardassian, and you know, we have Romulans, and we have Bolians and so on and so forth. So all of these cultures coming, the Bajoran response to the question of, you know, what is the meaning of life I just can't see Quark, you know, piercing his ear and going to the temple and having an orb experience,
piercing his lobes. Right?
I don't see Martok, you know, making a pilgrimage to the celestial temple to meet a prophet.
Yeah, you know, you're hitting on something that's really interesting, because Deep Space Nine is a type of melting pot where the different cultures and races all come together on this space station, you know, each of which has their own views and their own meaning, maybe their own religion. But there is a reason that Deep Space Nine kind of has this dark tone, right? There is this kind of nihilistic darkness to Deep Space Nine, because you can't, it's not like any of those people are living amongst their own, right? They're in this melting pot environment on Deep Space Nine. They're all strangers in a strange land in some way. And, you know, I think any sort of melting pot environment is going to face these kinds of issues, right? Where you're confronted with other kinds of meaning besides the meaning that you find. And there's going to be conflicts. There's going to be, you know, whether people find a way to live peacefully, or whether there's going to, you know, there's a reason that there's a lot more, I don't want to say crime, but there's a lot more, Odo has to play a larger role for security than Worf did, right? There's a lot of issues going on because of these types of conflicts. And I think any sort of melting pot is just going to have that kind of culture clash that causes everyone to have some sort of fear about the meaning of life. And I think we see that, I mean, heck, we see that it's an election year, right? It's 2016 now. I think we see that now in an election year. You know, one of the big issues seems to be immigration. And by no means are we going to tackle the immigration issue here. But that is, I think, is one of the concerns about this melting pot environment as people enter from different backgrounds and different countries and with different worldviews and different sets of assumptions. There's a threateningness to that that creates a kind of fear about the meaning of life. And I don't know how to flesh that out really, but I think it's really related to this sort of nihilistic fear that maybe the assumptions that one might have about what life means when confronted with people who have different views, there's an essential fear to that is threatening.
One of the things,
and I think you see that played out on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, and one of the things that I appreciate about Deep Space Nine as a series, and it kind of ties back to what our listeners all hear at the opening of Metatrex every time they listen. You know, Captain Sisko, or then I think it was actually Commander Sisko, says to Keiko O'Brien and to Kira Nerys, you know, my philosophy is that there are room for all philosophies on this station. And so I think Deep Space Nine did a really good job of fleshing that out. You know, what does that look like? Yes, sometimes there's going to be conflicts. You know, a Klingon cannot go and, you know, avenge a wrong by murdering another Klingon on station. And, you know, the Ferengi are certainly welcome to generate profit, but they can't do so illegally, and so on and so forth. The Bajorans are, you know, are free to, you know, to worship in their way and live life as they see fit. And all of these other cultures coming in, have, you know, their own answers to the question of the meaning of life. And so you're right. It's this melting pot, where everyone has to, try to coexist. And occasionally there's conflict. But at the end of the day, we can see that yes, there can be, concord, to the various, philosophical ideas, that are brought in by these various cultures.
Well, you know, the progression of the different Star Trek series really kind of mirrors the cultural and even intellectual progression of thought about the meaning of life, right? In the 1960s, you had this progress narrative that was going on, and without a doubt, the original series, you know, was firmly part of that progress narrative. The idea of that the Federation is a wagon train to the stars, right? That's a progress narrative. And then even extending into Star Trek: The Next Generation, I think you get a largely sort of universal, optimistic progress narrative as a whole. And then in Deep Space Nine, you get this pushback against that, right? You get this kind of this nihilistic, pluralistic, postmodern melting pot approach to meaning, and all the issues we've talked about. It'll be interesting to see. And I guess it's too early in the 21st century to know, I think, right? You know, the history hasn't unfolded yet. You know, what will be the defining question of the meaning of life in the 21st century? I don't think we know the answer to that question yet. What is the sort of the post-nihilistic, post-melting pot fundamental question of the meaning of life? I'm curious to see what the next Star Trek series, Star Trek, what we're calling Star Trek 2017, what fundamental issues about the meaning of life will have arisen based on what's happened in the last 15 or 20 years since we've really had a new approach to Star Trek on TV. You know, and with Enterprise, it was an attempt to it's, I think Enterprise falls within that critical theory approach, right? You know, you're on the edge of the frontier, you bump into some furniture and you get all the drama you end up with in Enterprise. It falls kind of within classical critical theory. Yeah? You're pushing back against the progress narrative in some way. But what is the post progress narrative, right? It'll be interesting to see, you know, and again, I'm how old am I? I'm 37 right now. You know, in 50 more years when I'm 87, it'll be interesting to look back on the 21st century and see what has been the question of the meaning of life in the 21st century that's distinctive as opposed to the 20th century. And I think everything we've seen in Star Trek, even including Star Trek Enterprise, has a largely 20th century approach to the question of meaning. I think it's just too early in the 21st century to really know what will be meaningful to us in the 21st century as distinct from what we've seen in any of the previous Star Trek series.
I think you pose a great question there, Zachary, for our listeners. It'd be a wonderful discussion for the Babel Conference. What will Star Trek 2017, and you're right, I think that's what we'll call it for now. What will be Star Trek 2017's answer to the question, what is the meaning of life?
Yeah, and how can you ask the question in a new way that hasn't been approached before? I mean, you know, you can think of the events in the real world in the last 15 years. You know, we have September 11th, we had the war in Iraq, and now we've got this terrorism issue with ISIS and whatnot. And it'll be interesting to see what the, you know, what is the fundamental struggle, all of that having been taken into account, and how can you play that out inside of a Star Trek drama that adds something to the discussion of the meaning of life and doesn't just rehash old issues? So yeah, that's a great question for our listeners on the Babel Conference. You know, what is the fundamental question of the 21st century, and what is unique about the meaning of life now for us having gone through all those events in the last 15 or 20 years? What can Star Trek tackle head on in a way that it hasn't done before?
Well, Zachary, as we wind down here, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I think we should probably sum up again, you know, so we have this question of the meaning of life, and, you know, that can mean two different things. There's meaning of life in some sort of capital M grand meta narrative sense. And then there's the meaning of life in some sort of smaller lowercase m individual or local or cultural sense, right? And I think, you know, if you're a theist or if you are a firm believer in the progress narrative, and I think for a lot of us, I think we're very attracted to the progress narrative. We think that we can solve problems with technology, and we can solve social problems by coming together around some shared ideals. So it's very difficult to criticize that narrative, because I think all of us find that attractive in some way. I can't imagine there are Star Trek fans out there that aren't at least tempted to give that answer to the question of the meaning of life. But there are some issues with it. You know, the dark underside of that answer is this hegemony and this sense of cultural appropriation, and these things that we, that might be, may or may not be necessary counterparts to the progress narrative. You know, the unanticipated negative effects of progress that give you reason to criticize progress. Like, just like the Baku in Star Trek Insurrection, right? They've turned their back on progress because they think they're losing something in the process. And that's one of the things that's amazing about that movie, is because that movie is explicitly trying to push back on the Federation's progress narrative in a way that you don't see too often inside Star Trek itself. So the question of the meaning of life, I think it's hard to give one answer to that question. And if you reject the idea that there's one answer to that question that applies to everyone, everywhere, at all times, then you're forced in the direction either of nihilism, just like that the sort of nihilistic member of the Q continuum in Voyager that wants to commit suicide, right? Yeah, like the philosopher Albert Camus said that he thought the fundamental philosophical question was the question of suicide. Whether life is or is not worth living is, for Camus, the fundamental philosophical question. He thought that everything else was just less important than that question. As you start to ask philosophical questions and ask about meaning, you eventually have to ask yourself, is life worth living or not? And, you know, if you reject the narrative, the progress narrative, or the grand meta narrative in some way, then you have to, the burden is to say, well, what does life mean? What does life mean for you? What does life mean for your culture in some smaller sense? And then when you do that, you know, if that's your answer to the question of meaning for me, the question that I find in choosing to commit myself to various projects or to care about certain things or to care about certain people, the question is, well, what about the question of pluralism? You know, there are people that have different answers and care about different things and have different values they've chosen or different projects they've chosen to pursue, and they conflict with your own, and you end up with all the conflict you'd expect, culminating in something like this melting pot environment of Deep Space Nine, or culminating in something like this increasing melting pot we see culturally in the world. You know, we live in a world that is largely pluralistic and global, and the melting pot issues are surfacing again and again and again. So for me, I think the question of meaning, you know, whichever side you fall on, if you think that there's some grand narrative, then the burden is to try to explain, you know, everything you see in world and culture in terms of that narrative, and that's not easy to do. If you fall on the other side of the coin, you think that meaning is a sort of a small m and you find your own meaning, you have to deal with these questions of pluralism and the melting pot issues and all of the conflict that ensues as a result of having a cultural melting pot of values, of different ways of answering the question of what life means. And so do I have any final thoughts on that? I think no. I think, you know, this is one of the fundamental challenges of the 21st century is to, you know, figure out how to make sense of this melting pot environment where we have a radical clash of values, in a way that we've never quite had to deal with before, because we've always hitherto been able to explain world history in terms of the grand narrative. And I think either, you know, there is no narrative and we're going to have to just find a way to make peace in light of the melting pot, or some new meta narrative will emerge and we haven't seen what that is yet. And it'll be interesting to see what actually happens as world history unfolds. But in terms of Star Trek, I think this is just the question, you know, is the Federation the ultimate answer to the question of the meaning of life? Does that provide some sort of meaning in terms of progress that really does unify the different races that you see in Star Trek? Is there the potential to, regardless of what stories you actually see in Star Trek, just like the example that you mentioned in that episode, The Chase, where some sort of narrative, some sort of common origin story has the potential to unite the Klingons and the Cardassians and the Romulans and humans and whatnot. Is that a realistic, plausible scenario that kind of meta-narrative can really unite people together in a way they were never united before? Or if you're skeptical of that narrative, how do you go about finding peace in the absence of a meta-narrative like that? So that's my final thoughts. I think that's just the challenge as I see it for the 21st century in light of everything we've talked. There's questions of individual meaning, what life means to me, and, you know, without a doubt, there's new answers to that question as technology and science do progress. And as we find new answers to social problems, that gives us new answers to the question of the meaning of life, right? The fact that I'm sitting here doing a podcast required some technological developments, and this is giving my life meaning in some way, right? That I couldn't have foreseen 20 or 30 years ago. So it'll be interesting to see that as things do progress in those spheres, whether there are new answers to the question of the meaning of life that emerge, whether on some grand meta-narrative scale or on the individual scale. But I think this is just the open question for the 21st century. And I think, unlike a lot of philosophical questions where you're really trying to give a descriptive account of the way reality really is, right? You know, when you're talking about metaphysics, for example, you're trying to ask these deeper questions. What is reality fundamentally like in some objective sense? And I think when you're talking about the meaning of life, you just don't have that luxury of trying to give the one account of the meaning of life for all time. I think most of us are probably largely skeptical of that approach. And you're forced into asking the question in some other way. You know, what does life mean for me, or what does life mean for us in some sort of cultural sense? And how do you answer that question in a way that is not objective without just making it a total relativistic, subjective answer that it's not going to be convincing to anyone else? So I think it's just a different kind of philosophical question with different criteria, and that's why it's somewhat interesting for me, because it's not clear at all what the goal of the question is. It's not easy to define the question. It's not easy to know what method to use to answer it. It could mean a number of different things, and it's largely tied to how history actually unfolds. I think the question of meaning is different for every generation, and, you know, like I said, it's only the second decade of the 21st century, and we've got 8 more decades to go. So we'll see what meaning in the 21st century is fundamentally like. Talk to me in a few decades and we'll see if my answer is different. That's my answer.
Indeed. Well, Zachary, one of the questions that we brought up in the course of today's episode, you know, does Star Trek suffer from a crisis of meaning given the vastness of the galaxy and the plurality of cultures and worlds? And I think that's an important question. And I think it's one that for the most part throughout the history of Star Trek, they have answered with the simple answer of progress. In the episode, I think it was The Gamesters of Triskelion, Captain Kirk says that we found that all life forms in the galaxy are capable of superior development. And I see that philosophy played out a lot throughout the course of Star Trek. It's always been about progress. It's been about the wagon train. After all, the wagon train to the stars. I mean, you think about the history of our own country and the wagon trains that went from the east out there to, you know, California. Well, first of all, here to the west, you know, where I'm at in Texas and the plains, and then, you know, on out past the Rocky Mountains and into California. It was all about progress, and certainly we could dive into the controversial topics of manifest destiny and you know, colonialism, and we've touched on those a little bit. But, you know, kind of setting that aside, it's always been about progress. And I see, you know, in the Star Trek universe, that same sort of narrative. Progress is what unites us. We can all come together. I mean, the founding of the Federation was all about, you know, furthering, you know, for instance, those original five species. You know, let's come together. Let's work together. Let's, you know, let's drive progress, and let's impact, you know, our little corner of the galaxy here. Even going back before that, you know, unifying the world government, solving the problems of hunger and poverty and so on and so forth. It was all about progress and bettering ourselves. And you know, by the time we get to Captain Picard's time in First Contact, he's telling, you know, Lily, we've solved hunger and we've solved poverty, and we don't, money as you know it isn't part of our culture anymore. And it's all about progress. And I see that changing. You know, and you're right, once we get to Deep Space Nine, it is this melting pot. It does take on a more pluralistic tone, and we see that that occasionally leads to conflict. So if we were to march various characters in here, you know, for instance, if we were to ask Captain Picard, I'll stick with my original answer. I think his answer would be progress. And if we were to ask Quark, you know, what's the meaning of life? I can see him clicking a couple of pieces of gold pressed latinum together and saying, there's your meaning. I got your meaning right here. I think if we ask Martok, he would probably, you know, pull his Mechlith out and say it's about being a warrior and ensuring your place in Stovall Corps. And you know, for Kira Nerys, it's about you know, doing the will of the prophets. And the Cardassians, you know, I think for the Cardassians, who very much to me resemble you know, the old Soviet state, I think it would be all about Cardassia. And I think the same is true probably with the Romulans. So the meaning of life takes on different tones, and it has different meaning. So at the end of the day, it isn't one big, you know, meta narrative, but rather it's each of these cultures answering and defining that for themselves. And while I certainly believe what Captain Kirk had to say in The Gamesters of Triskelion, that I believe we are capable of great progress, I think by and large, as we move along here, the tone of Star Trek seems to be that progress is important, but, you know, not at the expense of dissolving what is important to other people, other species in the galaxy, that we have a responsibility to respect, you know, their own unique take on what the meaning of life is, and you know, respect where they are going as a people and find common ground. And so At the end of the day, once again, I don't know that we completely answer the question, but it certainly gives us some food for thought. And I think for most of us here in the 21st century, it's what we make or what we define on our own as meaning. What life means to me may not necessarily be what life means to to a listener out there, but I believe that we certainly can find common ground and move in a common direction. And I think that's very Star Trek, isn't it?
Well, I think you're right that Captain Picard's answer to the question of meaning, if Data were going to ask him a question about the meaning of life, Captain Picard's answer would be tied up with the question of progress. And then, you know, like all philosophical terms, you want to kind of define your terms a little bit and make some distinctions, right? There's progress in some meta-narrative sense, right? There's progress in the manifest destiny sense. There's progress in the technological sense, you know, solving problems through technology in some big grand sense. But there's also social progress. And then it's an open question about what social progress really means, right? There's social progress in the sense of, you know, spreading Federation values to the rest of the galaxy, that in some sort of hegemonic sense. But that's largely, I think, to us, has kind of a negative connotation these days, especially in light of the critical theory issues and the colonialism issues we've talked about. But if we can find a way to respect the meaningfulness of other cultures and the meaningfulness of people with other worldviews in this melting pot sense that you start to see in Deep Space Nine, and we're definitely living with here in the 21st century, that itself is a type of progress, not in a meta-narrative sense. But I think you can point to that and say, if we can find a way to live in harmony with each other without things like terrorism and without things like wars, and without the types of conflicts we're seeing in the early part of the 21st century here, that, you know, if even if it's not a meta narrative, it's some sort of social progress, right? And I think, you know, I think that would be something along the lines of Captain Picard's answer: finding a way to live in peace and harmony, and learn from each other, and still find a way to explore and go out and be an increasing part of the galaxy. I think Captain Picard's answer would be tied up with that kind of an answer, and that sure sounds like progress in some sense, if not in some sort of meta-narrative sense. Well, we really want to invite our listeners to comment on this issue of the meaning of life in the Babel Conference or with us on Twitter. And again, just to remind everyone, Trek FM's listeners group is called the Babel Conference, and you can find it by going to Facebook and typing Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search engine in Facebook, and it'll come right up. It's a closed group just for Trek FM listeners, so if you're not a member of the group already, just hit join, and someone will let you right into the group, feel free to join the discussion and comment on the meaning of life. Like I said, unlike a lot of other philosophical issues that can be very abstract or somewhat technical, I think the meaning of life is directly relevant to each and every one of us every day. So every listener out there probably has some views on what the meaning of life is or should be, and hopefully some commentary on some of the deeper issues we talked about during the episode today. So feel free to join us on the Babel Conference and comment away. We'd love to have you join the discussion, and no issue is off the table here in terms of the meaning of life. So join us on the Babel Indeed. Conference and let us know your thoughts. But the meaning of life isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It would be a lot of fun to be able to MST3K an episode like Arena, which, who doesn't love poking fun at a rock-throwing Gorn? I mean, come on, you know?
Can you find a rudimentary lathe?
Exactly. I wrote that on the Babel Conference today because Guy Fliegman from Galaxy Quest is the greatest character ever.
Earl Grey.
This 547 meter long, 32 deck, 502 crew member.
That's awesome.
The Orb.
He requests, you know, a Bajoran officer to serve with him on purpose, you know. He understands. You make this their own. We can't.
I'm glad he did it on purpose. I could see him like accidentally requesting a Bajoran officer. Oh man, I checked the wrong box on the form. Damn.
To the journey! Benjamin and Kira. They would never touch like that.
No, that just would be really unnatural and weird for them. But for Janeway and Chakotay, it's very natural.
It's very comfortable. It's like slipping into a warm bath and hopefully Q's not in it. Commentary, Trek Stars.
I just finished a book on Audible that was recommended to me by some other people here on the network. Yeah. It's called Weapon of a Jedi.
They steered you right, Mike.
Nope.
The 602 Club.
And it's literally like the first page after the introduction, and it says, hey, here's the three factions. The New Republic, they don't want to commit to a full-scale war with the First Order, so they allow and back Princess Leia to create the Resistance. And I'm like, oh, okay. That makes total sense. Like, it took me 1 minute to read.
Women at Warp.
She's the communications officer first. She can be Spock's girlfriend second.
So how do you think people would respond if you said, describe who Carol Marcus is after seeing this movie?
She looks nice in her bra.
Meta Trex.
I looked it up, and ornare is the Latin word for to adorn.
That's fascinating.
So I looked up Brekka, and it turns out the same spelling, B-R-E-K-K-A, is Old Norse for slope or hillside.
And that, listeners, is something you will only get right here on Metatrex.
Better living through etymology.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats in our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all of the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS Enterprise Orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can help make it happen. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, or to send us your thoughts on anything we discussed in this episode of Metatrex, you can contact us in several different ways. You can contact us via a form on Trek FM's website. Just go to trek.fm/contact.
You can also look in the sidebar of the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm.
On Twitter, you can find us under the handle @trekfm.
And for you Facebook users out there, facebook.com/trekfm. You can also find us in the Babel Conference. Type the Babel Conference. That's B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at Trek FM and click Discussion on the menu bar.
We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of Metatrex on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, Mike, when you're not pondering the meaning of life, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Facebook. I'm frequently in the Babel Conference. Also on Twitter, my username is @cmichael1701. And Zachary, how about you?
Well, you can find me as a semi-frequent guest on several recent episodes of The Ready Room, Trek FM's flagship show. You can find me in the Trek FM listener group, the Babel Conference, on Facebook, if you want to talk Star Trek and philosophy with me there. And you can always find me on Twitter under the handle Zachary Fruhling. That's just my name. The spelling is ZACHARYFRUHLING. We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the Metatrex team from the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our executive producers, Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Norman Lau, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Will Wynn, our content manager, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Dennis Costello, our editor and producer. Well, everyone, thank you for listening to Metatrex, a Star Trek philosophy podcast. Until next time, when we will once again boldly go where no philosophers have gone before.
What, they don't use gold-pressed latinum up there where you're from? Well, it comes in handy down here, let me tell you.